Hey, what's up, everybody? This is the Dot Daddy Podcast. Today is December 4th, 2024, and I am here with Tobias all the way in Denver, Colorado. What's going on, Tobias, from Scout Pro in Denver, Colorado?
Joey, it's an absolute honor to be here. I appreciate the opportunity more than you know.
I appreciate you coming on. And so I had met you at Meeting of the Minds, and you were... You said something, and maybe we can either go into it now, but I think we should probably save it for later. But you said something at the table, and you know, with the microphone, and Kira, maybe we'll pull a clip up of that in the actual podcast.
No, unfortunately, this has broken me, not only financially, mentally, physically. This isn't all peaches and cream. And I think having that transparency in your training is really key too. You know, you can be successful, but I really like to tell people, like, you know, this isn't all peaches and cream. And a lot of these things people have maybe attained outside of SMP. It's all a facade, so you can't necessarily go off of somebody's highlight reel. And I really am transparent in that training, like, hey, this isn't all peaches and cream. This will break you. And not only, like, on a business standpoint, but on a ethical standpoint, because there's been a lot of times where I felt like, you know, when you do the procedure, you felt like you could have did things better. And having those over and over and over again can really weigh on you mentally. It can turn you into an ugly person. It felt like it costed me a relationship with my wife. So having that transparency and having a little point in the training where you're like, hey, this is my story. So this is an introductory class, but if you really want to do this, be prepared for what you're gonna encounter.
But it really resonated with me. You were talking about how, you know, this business can break you and how you've been dealing with a lot being an SMP artist. And I didn't even know this until we were talking offline. You actually used to work for Good Look Inc. and then you broke away and started Scout Pro. But I just wanted to give everybody that little background because I'm not sure if they know either. But we'll go into that as we're moving along. But anyway, one of the things I wanted to ask you about, what's it like being out in Denver? Were you out there when weed started being legal? I guess, what was that, 10, 12 years ago?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm a Denver native. I'm born and raised here in North Denver. My studio is actually in the same neighborhood I was born in or grew up in. Wow. But with that being said, yeah, the legalization of marijuana took place in 2005. I was in high school. Since 2005, I've noticed a lot of changes from the amount of people here to the type of people here and just the overall culture. I feel like has definitely changed since the legalization of marijuana, for sure.
Would you say it's for the better or not so good?
You know, I'm a bit biased. The reason why I say so is because I feel like a lot of people weren't necessarily welcoming to the legalization because they felt that it brought on a certain type of client or a certain type of person or brought a certain type of person. I felt like there was a stereotype associated with smoking marijuana at the time. It was like, it was just a huge culture change. I mean, from, you know, being stopped and pulled over and arrested. I've seen, you know, high school friends of mine getting busted for smoking doobies to, you know, being able to buy it legally. It was just, it's just absolutely ironic and crazy to this day. I mean, I feel like there's a dispensary, two or three on every block. I sometimes feel like I'm in the wrong business.
And when you say 2005 it was legal, you mean that was when the medical use and then the recreational came? Like, I don't understand that part.
Oh, yeah. So I believe it was, and don't quote me on this, Joey, I believe in 2005 is when the medical application was passed. And then shortly thereafter, I would say 5-6 years, they passed the recreational. Right. But the medical... I felt like, you know, all you had to do was just pay the money. It wasn't necessarily a true evaluation in terms of if you actually needed it.
But that's just between you and I. Get your medical card, you know, yeah, type thing. That. Okay.
Yeah. A lot of friends in high school.
I'm depressed. My back hurts. That kind of thing.
Anxiety.
Yeah, you got to do what you got to do. Now, were you friends with anyone growing up who got into the weed industry that's doing really well out there? Or do you know anybody?
Absolutely. I have a couple friends that do solventless hash rosin. They make like a concentrate, and they've kind of made a brand and got that brand into stores. And They're doing pretty well for themselves, but you know, it's hard to not hate them from behind. You know, it's not hard to be jealous. Like I said, I sometimes feel like I'm in the wrong. They're smoking pot all day. They're having a good time and driving all these fancy cars, you know.
but they also, you're right, I know, because it's like, damn, it looks like they're making easy money, but we all know they work their butts off. But it's also scary, because so weed just got legalized. So it was decriminalized in Delaware, I think, I don't know, 6 years ago, 7 years ago, but it's now recreational. It passed last year, but this starting, I think, January, you know, coming up, January 2025, you'll be able to go to the store and just buy it. And they only give out a certain number of licenses. But in my head, I'm thinking, let's say I wanted to, Joey Dots, I wanted to start a weed business. I'd be paranoid that some fucking kid's going to follow me or watch me because they know I got weed. I'm fucking all over the internet. Everybody around here sees my face a lot, right? Because I'm blasting all these videos. I'm like, they're going to try and rob me or something. Like, I'd be paranoid all the time. That's my concern.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a, you know, especially in these times, I think that's a viable concern. You know, times are rough, you know, in every industry. So I can definitely see where you're coming from.
Yeah. Okay. And how what did you think of Meeting in the Minds? I like to ask people who were there. What'd you think of it?
I think it was an awesome experience. And the reason why is because, you know, I live alone. I work alone. I start to talk to myself after a certain amount of time. And then when you try to talk to somebody about Scout Micro or the trials and tribulations or some of the successes that you may be having in the industry or around SMP, I often see like a glazed over look in the listener's eye. I don't know if they're smoking the wacky tobacco or I'm just boring. And I think it's the latter. I think I'm boring. So it's nice to go to these events and, you know, identify and have some sort of camaraderie amongst other artists, and that just really in itself I feel like is worth the money, but also the education that comes with such an event. There's always stuff that I'm learning. As you know, the industry is always evolving, so learning some of the new, you know, industry standards and some of the new needles out and is always nice, and it's always invigorating, so to speak.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree. I had a great time. You do learn a lot and you do get network. I talk to myself all the time, so don't feel guilty. I talk to myself when my wife's in the room, you know? I always got ideas going.
Be happy you got the wife, though, because sometimes when you have nobody, it gets a little awkward sometimes.
Okay, so that was what brings me to my next question. So are you married? Have you been married or... You've been
no,
single?
I'm actually divorced. It's been about since 2021. You know, an SMP, I wouldn't necessarily use the reasoning behind it, but one thing that I really wanted to talk about that I'm eager to talk about, Joey, is my journey when it comes to Scout micropigmentation. Initially, I think a lot of artists were sold that you know, this is going to be something that you're going to make a ton of money on, and it's going to happen fairly quick. And I'm going to be quite honest with you, Joey, it's not until the last three or so years that I've actually seen a return on my investment. And wow. So that's something that I really want to talk about when sitting down with you, because, you know, at Meeting of the Minds, I've seen a lot of awesome stories. I've seen a lot of, you know, inspirational stories, but I don't mean to be dark. I don't mean to be depressing, but my story hasn't necessarily been all peaches and cream, crimson and clovers. This therapy, learning SMP, as you know, that's only part of the battle. That in itself was really taxing. And I don't know if it was at the wrong place at the wrong time, or I was trying to achieve something at the wrong time or a stressful time or a point in my life. And it just kind of compounded things. But I really like to speak on this faucet of SMP because I notice when I do, everybody comes up to me, they're like, dude, well, I feel the same way, or, you know, I can identify with you in a certain way. I'm glad that you said that because, man, you know, and I almost feel like that's part of the reason why you're having me here today, Joey. You mentioned something at the beginning of this podcast that there was a story that I told at the table with the mic, and it kind of it resonated with you. And that's something that I really want to talk about. And the reason why, not to be dark, not to be grim, but to offer some sort of hope, some sort of light at the end of the tunnel for artists that feel lost. that are experiencing some of the anxiety, some of the worries that I struggled with. And
what is
and
it? What happened, Tobias? What happened? Tell us.
Oh gosh, where do we begin? I think the best way to kind of go about my story is just kind of go from the beginning. And you know, there's not necessarily anything. There's a few things that stick out in my mind, but I feel like my journey altogether has been trying, and there hasn't necessarily been one portion of that journey that has been like, oh, this is the make or break, or this is the hump. Altogether, collectively, it has been a stressful time until recently, where I feel confident where anybody walks through the door. I don't care what your nationality is. I don't care who you are. I feel confident in achieving a realistic result. And it hasn't been until these last couple of years that I've found that clarity, that peace, if you would. And I would like to kind of offer my story for people that can maybe see themselves or identify themselves in their journey and my story, and maybe give them some sort of light. So I'll begin in 2017, Bryce, Cleveland. I got licensed as a traditional barber in 2012. I cut some hair. My grandfather was a barber. It's a true passion of mine. But it wasn't until 2017 that I got introduced to Scalp Micropigmentation. As to how, I believe it was maybe some sort of social media profile. I don't know if I ran across his profile or somebody that he had trained, or maybe if it was the Scalpa page altogether. But I trained with him initially. At the time, I owned Ramon's Aesthetic Barbershop. We were located at 525th Street in Rhino. And at the time, I wanted to implement scalp micropigmentation into the traditional barbering or into the barbershop. And, you know, it started out getting a couple clients from Bryce. And it wasn't until the third client that he sent me, and it was an FUT, a follicular unit transport scar. Oftentimes, those are linear from ear to ear. And in my opinion, those are, you know, not something that needs to be taken with a grain of salt. Those need to be taken with a certain level of experience and seriousness. And so I kind of expressed my concerns to Bryce at the time. And I remember, and I tell you this, you know, and not necessarily in confidence. I guess I can, you know, tell this to everybody, because this may offer, or this may be, or resonate with something that they experienced. But I called him and I told him that I wasn't necessarily comfortable with treating this gentleman. I feel like that FUT, he's a Fitzpatrick one. Man, I was just super worried about it. And so I called him, let him know how I was worried about it. And at the time, he answers the phone. He has his shirt off. He has two gorgeous women with him, and he's in Cabo. And he answers, like, what's going on? I go, hey, man, you know, I'm really worried about so-and-so coming in tomorrow. And he goes, what? You took the training. And I go, I understand. But, you know, in the training, they didn't really go over, you know, scar camo. And so he goes, oh, well, Tobias, if you want to learn to be an eagle, you need to learn how to fly like an eagle. So here's your time to fly. And I thought he was joking. He hung up on me, and I called back and kind of got hung up on again, and kind of heard some laughing in the background from these females. And I kind of was just like, you know what? I'm just not going to do it. So the gentleman arrived the next day, and I know you paid in full, but I'm going to be quite honest with you. I feel like you're outside of my skill set. And I turned him away. Super embarrassing. That was like the first time I got a taste into what I was in for when it comes to SMP. That was super embarrassing. The guy was obviously upset. He paid good money, paid in full. And for him to arrive in a subpar kind of barbershop environment and be told that I can't do his procedure, I can definitely feel his frustration. So
I just want to pause you right there. I think it's smart that you turned him away versus actually doing it if you didn't feel comfortable, because a lot of people would have just did it and jacked the head up.
Absolutely. And don't get me wrong, it crossed my mind, Joey. I was like, ah, let's just get it done, you know. But, you know, I just was like, you know what, I just can't. I just can't. And I don't know if I was not confident enough or not courageous enough, or maybe I'm just too ethical. I think a lot of people would have said, hey, man, just get it done, get your practice in. And I just wasn't willing to practice on him. He was a nice guy. And I still remember Van Buren last name. And so I still have a relationship with him, because eventually I did do the procedure over time. But
oh, that's great.
Yeah, it's that was kind of my first. And then after that, you know, Bryce didn't want to work with me anymore.
Because you turned him away? Before you go any further, let me ask you this. What was your training?
So with that, it was an online training, And then they sent like this little dummy head kind of thing. And you would perform different hairlines on this dummy, and he would FaceTime you and look at it and say, okay, this is what you need to do. This is what you need to change. And after about, I would say about a month of that, because it was work at your own place, you know, you did the online portion first, and then you would do the clinical portion after that. I would say it lasted around a month of going back and forth, but it wasn't nothing that I put my effort towards every single day because I was cutting hair at the time.
And when you, because I also basically learned about SMP because of Scalpa, right? Yeah. You heard me talk. I eventually trained with Danny Uhrenberg, who also worked for Scalpa.
Rest in peace.
Yeah, rest in peace, Dan. And, you know, I never met Bryce. I just hear stories about him. But whether or not he was a good instructor, I don't know. You know, but what I do know, he was good at marketing. I guess that there was marketing. He was good. You learned about it. I learned about it. People learned about it. But
yeah, and I don't want to come off as if I'm talking bad about Bryce.
No, you're not. Like, you're telling your story. You're Tobias. Yeah. You're telling your story. This is your version of your story, and this is what actually happened. Don't feel bad about anything.
Thank you. I appreciate that, James.
Yeah.
After that, you know, I had invested a good amount of money in the training, and I was just lost. I had no direction. I felt taken. I felt played at the time. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how I was going to get any more clients. There was no education around client acquisition, marketing, social media, Google ads, none of that. And so it was just a very, again, confusing, tough time of my life, because I knew that I wanted to elevate my barbering career, but I felt like the avenue in which I attempted to do so just wasn't the greatest avenue. And I had ran out of money to invest at that time. So I just kind of went back to the drawing board, cutting hair, and built up my barbershop. We were 3 chairs, built it up to 5, and just kind of focused on, you know, finding barbers and really trying to build up that brand. And interim, there was a woman that I had met. She worked with Scalpa. And I asked her, Jillian Vogel is her name. God, I can't believe I remember that. Jillian Vogel, I reached out to her, and she wasn't necessarily a trainer at Scalpa. She's just, I don't know exactly what her role was over there, but I remember I had called her and I was like, you know, I got in a fight with Bryce. I'm very worried. I don't know what I'm going to do. You know, I'm just at a standstill. And she goes, wow, Tobias, you know, I'm no longer working with Scalpa either. I'm actually in the middle of suing him. And I'm like, whoa, what do you mean? And she goes, well, there's a lot of things that were going on behind closed doors. And ultimately, I'd like for you to write down your story, because you're a victim. And if you get chosen to testify out here in Arizona, I'll have you come out here and I'll pay for your flight to come and testify. And I was like, okay. So I wrote down my story. You know, I applied for a training. I trained with him. Seen a couple clients. After the 3rd client, we got in a fight and over a procedure that I didn't feel comfortable doing. And I just kind of wrote it all out and didn't hear from her for about 2 or 3 months. Again, very tough time. I was just like, oh, I'll just own a barbershop then. I guess I won't do SMB. And then she called me one day and she said, Tobias, you know, you weren't picked to testify, but I appreciate you writing everything. And I go, I'm glad that everything worked out for you in terms of your litigations, or if it didn't, you know, it's none of my business. But at the same time, I'm lost. I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know how I'm going to proceed forward. And she said, you know what, Tobias, I'm gonna keep your name. And there's a company that's looking for somebody in Denver. And I go, really? And she goes, yeah. And I just kind of, you know, I was like, okay, well, I appreciate that. Another 2 months, 3 months go by. And I remember I was at the supply house grabbing some supplies for the barbers, and I got a phone call. And it was Roxanne Chijos and Kevin and Leah Match and a couple other people that were on their board. It was like on a conference call, and I was like, hello, you know, and they're like, is this Tobias Romero? And I was like, yeah, this is him. And They're like, do you know Bryce Cleveland? And I was like, yeah, I know Bryce Cleveland. And they're like, okay, well, you know, we have a clinic out here in Minnesota, and we have, you know, we're aiming to have a clinic in almost every state. And we understand that, you know, you have an understanding of Scout Micro, and we'd like to bring you on board as an affiliate. And I was like, okay, well, what does that mean? That means that you would service clients in Denver on our behalf. So if we have a client that needs to be serviced, then you'll service that client on our behalf. And I'm like, oh, awesome.
Big news for the SMP world. Follicule has just dropped their new scalp pigment. It's bigger, better, and made with Hanafi Color Pigments, one of the largest pigment manufacturers in the world. Not only is this pigment backed by world-class expertise, but they are giving you more of what you need. That's right. Their new, bigger bottles mean you have enough pigment to do 20 to 25 sessions in just one bottle. And because you're part of the Dot Daddy podcast community, we're offering you an exclusive deal. 15% off all pigments and aftercare products when you use the code DOTDADDY at checkout. Take your SMP game to the next level with Follicule Pigments. Go to the Follicule website. Get it now.
So that was the answer to my prayers. So I would see maybe one or two clients. Next thing you know, it was three or four. But not a lot of these clients were submitting or wanting to go through with the procedure. And I felt like I started to notice that the culture of the barbershop wasn't necessarily conducive of the culture of Scout Micro. I've noticed Scout Micro was more of a clinical approach in comparison to the barbering, that it was a little bit more laid back. And I felt like that environment wasn't necessarily conducive to doing Scout Micro. So at the time, 2020, the pandemic hit. And so we were forced to close our doors by law because of the pandemic. You weren't able to cut hair, you couldn't do anything. And at that time, I felt like it would be a good time to focus on SMP. So I decided to let Ramon's Barbershop go and opened up a location in November of 2020 on Tennyson Street. And Tennyson is in the heart of the Highlands. It's a very, very nice neighborhood, and it's actually in the same neighborhood I grew up in, and it's gentrified so much that I always told myself that one day I'd either have a barbershop or a clinic on Tennyson Street. And I found a commercial real estate agent, and we looked at locations all day, and then one day he's like, hey, man, there's this location. It's on Tennyson Street. I just don't think you're going to like it. And I was like, why? He's like, it's kind of small, but it may work out for what you need. And I was like, okay. So we went and checked it out, and I fell in love instantly. I was like, nah, this is it. And he's like, really? And I'm like, yeah, this is it. This is where I want it to be. Let's do it. So I got the location. Everything was finalized in November of 2020. You know, I had to do some upgrades on the facilities. It had carpet in there and just wasn't looking to what I wanted. So I had Chad Bolsinger come and do a mural inside the location. And the reason why I chose him is because he did a mural in Ramon's Barbershop. He's a very renowned artist, but he's really close to the Lord. I really call him a walking prophet. His art is just unreal. And when he came and did the mural, he did a prayer with me. We sat down and we held hands and we prayed together. And, you know, he kind of vowed that this place would be a place of success, a place of ethics. And he said it, put it so beautifully. And it kind of brings tears to my eyes now thinking about it, because, gosh, it was just such a weird time, especially with the pandemic. At that same time, my daughter was born in April of 2020. So not only did I have the stress of the pandemic, I had my new child, and it was just a very, very stressful time. And that's when, you know, I kind of let Good Look Inc. know that I was going to just focus on S&P, and they were like, oh, I wouldn't do that. You know, I would really just do the barbering. You know, we can't promise you that we'll keep you busy, you know, and I don't know if this is a great idea. And really was kind of not necessarily against it, but really told me that that wasn't a smart business move, but I did it anyway. And around, I would say February or January, even the latter part of 2020, they asked me if I would be a traveling artist for them. They said, hey, I understand that you have that location. You're just focusing on S&P in an effort to help you. Maybe we can get you some more business or some more funds coming in if you travel for us to Houston to work alongside Dr. Jesnick at the Houston Hair Transplant Center. So I worked with Dr. Jesnick there, developed a great relationship with him there over the course of 3.5-4 years. And then that's where I felt like I feel like I got a lot of my practice, not necessarily practice, but where I had a lot of opportunity to refine my craft. And I felt like one of the reasons why I got so good at the linear hairline is because the type of population or the type of clientele that comes in the Houston office, you know, that was the more popular look amongst them. So I had an opportunity to practice that hairline more in comparison to some of my counterparts here in Denver. And I feel like that's really, you know, and I really attribute a lot of my success to good looking, and I appreciate them. It didn't, you know, end on an ugly point. It was, you know, it was just time. And the reason why I said it was time, because I had clients that heard about me that would seek out my name and want to come see me, and you know, they would have to go through good looking. So I felt like
there you'd was have to give good look Inc. a cut of the money.
Exactly. And after time, it just didn't make sense. You know, I developed a relationship or a reputation here in town for S&P, just kind of organically. I posted a lot on Facebook. A lot of people knew me in the neighborhood from traditional barbering. I'd tell every client what S&P was. So I really kind of developed that reputation on my own accord, to the point where people were calling and I didn't have a phone number. The phone or a lot of the advertisements were, you know, on behalf of Good Look Inc. If you want to see Tobias, well, he's here at Good Look Inc. So that's when in February of 2024, I decided to just really focus on my own accord. And since then, I've worked with John Chandler, servicing his clients out here in Colorado. I developed a relationship with Dr. Jesnick on my own accord, where I'll service his clients without Good Look Inc. So I've traveled out to Nice. Houston for him. And, you know, really starting to develop my approach on client acquisition. So that may answer your question as to why I'm having a little bit of a lapse in my website currently.
We were talking about that offline, people. Yeah. So Tobias, that's a lot of information. Let me ask you this. Were they paying for you to go back and forth to Houston, and how often were you going?
So Good Look Inc. would take me out there once a month. It would be 5 days. 3 clients a day.
Damn.
So that's one of the other, how I wanted to talk about, you know, how this can tax you, as a newer artist and having that, responsibility of 3 clients. Now I'm not talking 3 new clients. Now it would be, you know, 1 new client and 2 touch-ups. That was my rule. I can't do 2 new clients and a touch-up in one day. I'm not doing that because I'll be there all day.
I agree.
My first session, I like to take a bit of time with my clients. I like to go over expectations. I like to go over what to expect in between sessions 1 and 2. I like to go over aftercare, how to care for it. In addition to that, I like to go over the hairline design. In my first session, I feel like that's one of the more important aspects of it and one of the most time-consuming aspects, especially when it comes up to those linear hairlines.
Agreed. When you're in Houston and you're staying there, and so this guy, what's his name, Dr.?
Dr. Jesnick.
Dr. Jesnick. Now, he's a hair transplant surgeon. Is that what he does?
Yes, he's a Houston Hair Transplant Center in the Galleria.
And how did he feel about, would you also do density fills or just scars?
Most of it was density fills.
After he did the hair transplant?
Absolutely.
And what does he recommend? What does he recommend? What's the time frame? Because as far as I know, you should wait a year. After you get a hair transplant, wait at least a year before you do the scar or add density.
And I agree with that tenfold. But given that he's been doing it for quite some time, he's established a long relationship of clients that he was able to reach out to and say, hey, we do have this service now. I told it and mentioned it to you in times past when we completed your hair transplant. It's here now. Let's go ahead and bring you on in for that, those series of treatments.
So, okay. So he was able to recall a lot of it. Oh, okay, great.
And salad is a part of his hair transplant package. Like, hey, after you're completely healed after the year, know that you have 3 sessions of S&P.
Wow. Now, do you think, so they're going into it, let's say their transplant was $10,000, right? And then you either get the three, they also get three sessions after the transplant with the scar camo. Would it be like 1350, you know, 13,500,
you know,
or 13,000, something like that? Or would it just all be included at 10,000 and then Good Look Inc. would take their cut and then you get your cut?
Well, what I would do is I like to tell people that, and it's true, because when a client comes to you, whether they're frustrated or they have questions or they have qualms, concerns, whatever it may be in regards to the financial aspect of SMP, I like to eliminate that as a technician and really focus on the therapy. So oftentimes, you know, I would exclude myself. I could probably, you know, I could have probably known, but I honestly already knew what my cut was. I knew it wasn't my business. So I kind of just knew my place, so to speak, and would just kind of focused on the therapy. And when clients asked me, you know, how much is this or anything in regards to the financial, I'd really redirect them to Betty at Dr. Jesnick's or Beth at Good Look Inc. Anything in financial, I would kind of honestly divert to them, because again, the therapy is so hard in itself. When you have three clients that day, that's the last thing you want to know is, you know, talk about somebody's balance or collect somebody's balance or go over a financial question that they have.
Agreed. It is. That's good that you were able to do that, though. That's good that, and you just want to focus on doing SMP and being the best artist you could be. Mm-hmm. So I just want to back up a little bit. You said a lot in that story. So you grew up in Denver. What year did you graduate high school?
I graduated in 2007. And my grandfather was a barber in Juarez, Mexico. That's what kind of got me my love and passion for traditional barbering, something I grew up around and something that I actually completed right out of high school. So after high school, I went to the Community College of Denver. And I also simultaneously went to Emily Griffith Vocational College, where I got my barbering certification after a 9-month program. And what was cool is if you completed a vocational or a vocation at Emily Griffith, the Community College of Denver would give you an associate's degree of something called applied science, applied technology. So I got two associate's degree when I graduated from the Community College of Denver. It sounds fancy, but ultimately I got two just because I completed the barbering program.
Wow. What was your what were you studying aside from the barber stuff?
Initially I wanted to do a BSN with the focus of anesthesia. I wanted to be an anesthesiologist. So it was a nurse of anesthesia. I wasn't going to be the anesthesiologist. It was going to be the nurse of anesthesia. When I graduated high school, I went to Community College of Denver. I got my general studies, my 2-year degree. And then from there, I went to CU Denver and wanted to do their nursing program. And so I needed to do all their math and like science requirements before you can apply to the program. And a part of the requirements to even apply to the program is you had to have a certain amount of patient contact hours. Patient contact hours is where you're actually, you know, working with a patient behind, you know, working with clients, whether it's as a MA, whether it's a, you know, you're doing blood draws, or if you're, you know, working in the lab somewhere, things of that nature. So I went to work at Conifer Medical Center in 2013. At the same time, I was cutting hair. Cutting hair was always a side gig for me because my focus was the nursing. So I went to work at Conifer Medical Center and I worked their front desk on the weekends. So Friday, Saturday, as in Sundays, I was there, the only person there holding their front desk down as they were on a limited staff of two doctors on the weekends. And so when it came time to apply, I applied and I got denied. And when I asked why, they said, you don't have no patient contact hours. And I said, what are you talking about? I've been working at a doctor's office for the past however long. And they're like, Tobias, you've been working the front desk. That doesn't count as patient contact hours. Patient contact hours is when you're a medical assistant behind the door with the client, actually hands-on with the client. So And so I was really just, again, just frustrated. So I expressed that to the owner of the practice. His name was Dr. Robert Sarchet. I told him, hey, Sarchet, I really want to, you know, do the nursing thing. I want to become CRNA. And he goes, that's a great, you know, goal that you have. Let's get you some patient contact hours. So what he had me do is run his lasers. The first laser or machine that he had me run was his photodynamic therapy machine. The acronym is called PDT. This photodynamic therapy machine addresses precancerous lesions known as actinic keratosis. We want to kill these precancerous lesions before they manifest into basal cell carcinoma or other various forms of skin cancer. So this was a preventative procedure that was covered by Medicare twice a year. So I felt like that experience of working with Dr. Sarchet and running that machine really helped me out with my patient contact skills. So when I got into SMP, I felt like I had a notch above the other artists because I really had great patient contact skills. And after I ran their PDT machine, I had great success in running that. He asked me to run his YAG laser. Now, this is gross. I generally don't share this with everybody, but this YAG laser is used to treat onychomycosis. Onychomycosis is toenail fungus. Essentially, it's dermatophytes get caught in the nail bed, and we use a particular wavelength of lighting to kill those dermatophytes. Working with Dr. Sarchet, I felt like really helped me with my client or patient contact skills with running his PDT and YAG laser.
And did you, my wife worked for a dermatologist, a cosmetic dermatologist. Do you know what Mohs surgery is? M-O-H-S.
Yeah. That's the next step. Once the cell is actually cancerous, they actually have to cut that cell from the skin.
Yeah. She showed me pictures. She would cut people's noses off. They'd scrape the skin cancer and sew them back. It's like nasty stuff. Really nasty.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And the way PDT worked, or photodynamic therapy, is you would use levulonic acid. Levulonic acid was dispensed in the stick, a carrot stick is what they called it. You'd crack that carrot stick and it had like a little roller application, and you would kind of roll it onto the area of concern. Majority of people in Colorado, given that we're so high in elevation, that area of concern was the face or the chest.
What does the elevation do?
So given that we're so high in elevation, UVA, UVB rays, the sun doesn't even have to be out for UVA, UVB rays to penetrate through clothing.
You're so high up, you're closer to the sun.
Exactly. So,
and so you're so, I didn't even think about that.
So that's why the importance of sunblock, especially when it comes to aftercare with SMP, is so important. You know, I really recommend a physical sunblock. And a lot of people think all sunblocks are one and the same. There's a chemical sunblock. There's a physical sunblock. Physical sunblock is going to utilize a physical component like zinc dioxide or zinc oxide to reflect all spectrums of the sun, in comparison to a chemical sunblock that utilizes chemicals to keep you protected from the sun. I don't necessarily feel that it's ideal to utilize a chemical sunblock on top of the head after a procedure, even moving forward after the healing process.
You would say wear a hat. Would you say wearing a hat is better?
Yeah. Oftentimes, you don't want to use sunblock during the healing process, but I like to educate clients to utilize a brand by the name of Under Armour that makes UVA, UVB reflecting clothing, especially in Colorado. In Houston, wasn't too big of a concern. Yeah, it's hot out there, but gosh, in Colorado, like I said, the sun doesn't even have to be out for you to get a sunblock or sunburn. So I really like to educate clients that during the healing process, utilizing a clean, loose fitting hat that is UVA, UVB reflectant, if they're going to be spending some time out in the sun. Again, that's something that I do recommend against. But you know, you do have those clients who are like, oh, by the way, I scheduled a trip to Maui in between sessions 2 and 3. I just thought I'd let you know. And I'm like, wow, we're just in the middle. Okay, go to Maui. And we'll wear the hat in the meantime, please.
Yeah, right. I know exactly. Yeah. And then they come back and the head's all sunburned. I'm like, this is going to mess up my photo.
Exactly. And then they're like, why are we have to do session 4? I don't know, because you got a pretty substantial sunburn on session 2, which kind of made things a little bit lighter than what I'd like. So unfortunately, that's why we're going to have to do session 4, sir.
Yeah. Yeah, now I've been there many, many times.
What's up, SAP world? It's Chris with the Blends Protein. A lot of people are switching over to our products. The most realistic results are being put out using Blends products. These products were made for artists by artists. We want to make you a believer. Here's 20% off your first purchase. Use
Dot Daddy
Podcast. Blends for the most natural results in the world.
So do you think, one of the reasons why I asked you about your schooling that I want to know is I noticed your communication skills are, you have advanced communication skills for what I would say your average barber, right? You know, you talk like someone, like I worked in corporate, you heard my story. You talk like someone who worked in corporate or in the medical field, and lo and behold, you did go in the medical field. So you were around a lot of doctors. Would you say that really helped you in your communication skills, working with all those people, talking to doctors, talking to all these different people?
Yeah, I feel like the communication, I don't know, this might be my own insecurities, but I always kind of felt like I didn't identify with the normal medical type of people. Like the people that I worked with, I was culturally different from them. I was outwardly different from them. And so in an effort to kind of make up for that, if that's the word, is I would always want to dress professional. So I would dress up with a tie and everybody would kind of look at me really weird because, you know, you can wear scrubs or you can wear the tie to work and you had to pick. A lot of people would just wear the scrubs. I wore the tie every day and it made me stand out. And I really liked the way that made me feel. And I continue to do that. Like at Meeting of the Minds, there was days that everybody was dressed down. I chose to dress up and I feel like, I don't know, that's just something that I've always done. And then not only the dress or the way you look, but the communication. I felt like, you know, I had the tattoos. I felt like I always kind of didn't, I just needed to make up for it. So I felt like being a really good communicator and being a professional communicator would be a way for me to make up for my own insecurities. So when I do that, and if you notice me, sometimes I get super professional. I talk super professional. That's the time that I'm most nervous. When I'm super nervous, that's just something that I kind of err towards. Like that's just something that keeps me safe. And I used to do that a lot with when I first started with Scout Micro. I'd really super be super professional, dress up super hard because I knew my skill set wasn't the best. Now I've noticed that I've kind of gotten a little lax. Like today I'm wearing a Scout Pro shirt. I'm showing my tattoos, but I've kind of earned that confidence over time. So I feel comfortable to do it because I don't care who you are. I know I could communicate with you in a professional and effective manner. And now my outward appearance doesn't really hinder that anymore, I feel like.
Thank you for explaining that. That's perfect. And I know it's genuine. And guess what? It worked. It worked. So although it might have been some, you know, but might have been a learning curve for you during the process, you know, to figure this all out, it 100% worked. It was an investment into your ability to be more effective in everything you do. So it worked. So you should be. Yeah. So what? Because I know how you feel, too. I always felt like an outsider, an outcast. I was sort of, almost like a fake or a phony around these people who were, I would say, quote unquote, really smart, or they came from really nice backgrounds, or they did all these things, or their family had money. And I felt like I always had to make up for it as well. I always felt like I had a chip on my shoulder or I needed to prove something to them. But you know what? It just makes us stronger and more effective. So good for you. Good for you.
And I'm glad that you say that because I bring that same communication skill set to the procedure because I oftentimes tell the client, bring your wife, bring your significant other, your mom, whoever cares about you or whoever has an opinion about this, because I want them to be on the same page of S&P as we are, because there's been instances where I treat a gentleman. Session one, as we know, we go looser density. I oftentimes will maybe go a little bit looser on some of my darker Fitzpatrick's because I'm nervous about migration. I've kind of got my pressure down and my approach down, but I always like to err on the side of caution, especially on my darker Fitzpatrick's when it comes to migration, when we're doing these very symmetrical lineups. So sometimes on my first sessions, I go loose on my density. And I've had a client where they went home and their wife didn't, you know, come to the first appointment. They didn't go over any of the educational component of S&P. And their wife says, wow, you paid all that money for just a few dots on your head. And it really hurt the client's feelings. He called me. He's like, dude, you know, I was really excited to go home and show my wife. And she doesn't know that it's not complete, you know, and it just really bothered me. And we had a conversation about it. And that's when I reached out to her and I said, hey, I'd really like to kind of include you on session two. Come on down. And really sat down and educated her on session two and what to expect in between sessions one and two and the approach, why, what pigment I'm utilizing, why we're modifying it, what hairline is appropriate and the reasoning behind the hairline. I felt like they needed to be included on it. So as a part of my protocol, I oftentimes will always say, hey, bring in your wife, bring in whoever your significant other. I don't like to say wife, especially in this day and age. I always will say, bring in your significant other or somebody that has an opinion, or sees you on the daily. And you'll be surprised how many clients are like, wow, I can't, dude, I thank you so much for bringing my wife in. Like that really, thank you so much for that. And I'm like, no problem, no problem. Because the better communication we all have together, the better it's going to have a direct correlation on the procedure. So when you arrive session one, it's smelling good. Office is clean. I got a candle lit. We got some lo-fi kind of music playing in the background. And I got my educational movie up top. So when they arrive, I really like to, you know, have that clean smelling good. I want that energy to be conducive to the procedure. I want it to have a direct effect on the procedure.
I agree. I should start lighting a damn candle. I love that idea. I really should. I don't light candles and I really should. I spray Lysol and I open the windows and stuff, but that's a good idea. I actually might run with that one. I want to go back because you said a lot in the beginning and I'd like to kind of go back to that if that's okay.
And I'm sorry, Joey. I just have a lot to tell you, baby.
You realize you're in school. You get the two associate degrees. When do you realize you're not going to, you know, you're just going to stick with barbering?
Well, that's a great question. So as I was working with Dr. Robert Sarche at Conifer Medical Center, running his machines, I told you I always still cut hair. So on the side, I worked at Floyd's Barbershop. I worked at Rooster's Men's Grooming Center. And I was working at Rooster's Men's Grooming Center. And I remember I had worked 2 weeks straight at Conifer Med. And I got my paycheck. And I kind of divided it up by the amount of days that I worked. And then I went to work at Rooster's. It was like an evening shift. And I remember, I don't know what time of the year it was, but I remember looking at I clocked out for the end of the day. And obviously you don't keep the money when you work at like Rooster's and Floyd's. It goes to the cash register, but you can like see how much your tips were and how many hours you worked for the week. And then I was just being nosy. I was like, oh, I wonder how much money I made like average the last 14 days. And so I did the last 14 day average and I looked at my paycheck and it was significantly higher cutting hair. And it was a lot better of a time. I wasn't having to wear a tie. I wasn't having to deal with people that I didn't identify with. I'd go to the barbershop. I was the man. Everybody was cool. Everybody was dressed down. At the time, the legalization of marijuana had just taken place or was around taking. So people were, you know, smoking pot, having a good time. And I was making more money. So I was like, you know, I went to my mom and I told her, mom, you know, I really think I want to focus just on barbering. You know, I know I wanted to do the BSN, but those classes are extremely hard. I'm struggling in my class. In I remember it was chemistry two, chem two, gas stoichiometry. I was lost. I gave up. I was just so frustrated. I couldn't get it. I took the class twice. I failed it the first time, and I was gonna fail it the second time. And I was just getting frustrated. I felt like it was too hard of a goal for me. And I was like, you know what? I make good money cutting hair. I'm just gonna cut hair. And she says, you know, son, I support you in whatever you want to do. Life's not all about title. Life's not all about career. And at the time, I had a good best friend. His dad was the chief of surgery at Denver Health. I got him a job at Conifer Medical Center. He kind of stood there. He had a little bit more medical background, and I was a little bit in competition with him. And for me to kind of, just take the easy way out and cut hair. It kind of wore on my spirit. And, I had to ask my mom, what you think? And she's like, well, your grandfather was a barber. You made a great career out of it, son. I don't feel like it's something that you should be ashamed of. You're licensed. Do it. And I go, well, if I'm going to do it, Roosters and Floyd's barbershop is not where I'm going to get good. Like, the type of clientele that comes in every Friday and drops $50 isn't going to Floyd's. They're not going to Roosters. They're going to the most, pretty rough barbershop. And she goes, well, you have friends that own rough barbershops. Why don't you go ask them for a job? And so I did. I went and asked, his name was Saint. That was his name. I think his real name's Robert, but Saint was, spent some time in prison and had a pretty, pretty booming barbershop on the corner of Evans and Federal. And so I remember I walked in and I was like, hey, I've been cutting hair at Roosters and Floyd's for a while now. I'm not going to have any issues here. Like, nobody's going to scare me. Like, I'm not the best, but my skills are up to par to be able to handle myself. Boy, was I wrong. The type of clients that were coming in there were asking for, lineups and haircuts that I had never done before. And I was just butchering people and really messing people up. And this wasn't a barbershop where they would be like, oh, it's okay, here's your money back. These guys would jump out of their chair and say, let's go outside. Let's go handle something real quick. You messed up my lineup, bro. I'm going to teach you a lesson. And then not only did you have that stress, you had the barber that just got out of prison. And he goes to the bathroom and does some sort of drug for hours. The bathroom is tied up. He comes out like literally nodding like this. And he does one of the best haircuts that I've ever seen. And you're over there sober, clear eyed, really trying your hard. You got all the nicest tools. You got all the nicest, you watched all the tutorials on YouTube, and your haircut sucks in comparison. And he has, hand me down clippers and clippers that were put together and a razor. He don't even have the razor. He just uses the razor by itself, and he does a way better job than you. So, and then you have him beside you. His name was Tonic. Then you had Jose beside you. You never knew if you were going to fight Jose or not. There was times where him and I almost went to blows over what? I don't know. Was it friendly competition? Was it camaraderie? Was it jealousy? Who knows what it was, but him and I almost went to blows. So here you are going to work with Dr. Sarchet, where these drug reps would bring you lunch every day and educate you on the latest drugs, to working at Federal and Evans. No lunch, really rough people, really rough type of clientele. So I remember about the second week, I said, I went to my mom. I think I made a mistake. I think I should go ask for my job back at Dr. Sorry, at Conifer Medical Center. This barbering isn't for me. And I told Saint at the time, I'm like, hey man, I'm not going to work here anymore. And I think he was just a little bit selfish. He wanted the booth rent. He goes, no, man, you got to stick with it. This is, if you retreat, you're just going to be the laughing stock. Nobody's ever going to give you respect. And he goes, just stick with it. And I know it's going to be tough, but just stick with it. And I go, okay. And I did. And there'd be days where I'd have to call him over. Hey, Saint, come help me over here. And he'd fix it up. And I kind of would do it real sneaky. And he really helped me out. And I would say that if it wasn't for that stress that I went through with learning how to do barbering at such a high level, and that type of stress and those type of environment, people wanting to fight you, and then the barber next to you selling drugs and doing drugs, and I'm glad I stuck with it, because I felt like that was preparation for the real battle of S&P. Because S&P, you're not going to have Sane over there to come fix your little mistake. You're not going to have your mom there over your shoulder say, it's okay, son. It's just going to be fine. Just keep at it. You're on your own. And it's a tattoo. It better come out right, or else your name's on the line.
Shout out to Saint for making you stick with it. Well, giving you a little coaching to stick with it. Yeah, he got paid, but you're forced to learn. Trial yes. by fire, they call it.
And what was cool, Joey, is because I earned the respect of all those barbers. Tonic, I still see him around town when he gives me the head nod, because he knows I stuck with it. And you got to think, I wasn't like, I didn't identify culturally with any of those guys. I was the only light-skinned person there. I had green eyes. Nobody wanted to sit in my chair. I'm not going to go sit in the white boy's chair. And after, working there and gaining that confidence, and then You've seen that gentleman that wouldn't give you the time of day once upon a time, that would laugh at you and say you were trash, and that he would come in and you would be the only barber available, and he'd be like, all right, bro, go ahead and get me. And to finally earn that respect, that's when I was like, it's time to open my own barbershop. So that's when I opened up Ramon's Aesthetic Barbershop. I named it Ramon's because that was my grandfather's name. I named it Aesthetic because I wanted to do the S&P, Ramon's Aesthetic Barbershop. Check us out on Instagram, Ramon's_barbershop. We still keep the page up just as a momentum.
Okay. So how long did you end up staying there at that barbershop before you started your own one? Over a year?
I would say it was about 2 or 3 years. Okay. 2 or 3 years.
That's good. And then how far away did you move from that barbershop, like to your new location?
Oh, okay. So that was in South Denver. And then when I opened up Ramon's, that was in East Denver. So that was about a good 20-minute drive away from each other. Keep in mind, everything in Denver is about 15, 20 minutes, or at the time was about 15, 20 minutes away. So it wasn't, you know, a area of competition. It wasn't like I was, you know, down the street trying to steal his clients. It was truly my own standalone barbershop with my own clientele.
Okay. Okay.
The highlight of the shop, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, Roy, is my grandfather had a Koken barber chair. And Koken is one, this barber chair he bought a long, long, long time ago. So the chair that I would work out of was actually my grandfather's chair still have to this day. After I sold Ramon's, I retired it and I just have it in my office now, not in my S&P office, but my personal office at home. I don't want nobody touching it. Now that grandfather's passed away, he passed away at 91 years old.
Wow. When did he pass away?
About 4 years ago now. So that would be in 2021.
Okay. Wow. And, Tobias, I'm curious, what's your background? What's your heritage?
I'm Hispanic. I know a lot of people, you know, are confused. My hair says one, ethnicity. My skin complexion says another. My eye says another. And then my mouth says another. So I'm Hispanic, though.
You're Hispanic? Yes, sir. Both parents are Hispanic?
Yes, sir. So my mom was actually born in Mexico, and my dad was born here.
Okay. Yeah, you definitely... You look like there's some Hispanic in there, but I was like, maybe I think he's like my nephew's half Mexican, half white. And I was thinking maybe it's something like that. Okay.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people think I'm half black, half white. A lot of people do.
You could pass for a few things. You could be a spy. So you had mentioned earlier, so you got married at some point and then you got divorced and you had a daughter, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So running a business, having a kid, getting divorced, I mean, that's also takes a toll on you, right? It takes a toll on you. How do you deal with that?
I think you don't. I think it never gets easier. I think just time. I think time, and I know that's cliche to say, but time doesn't necessarily heal all wounds. It makes it a little bit more manageable. And then you start to develop tools to help manage that stress, that anxiety, physical activity, being with family, and really focus on the brand. When I find myself slipping into that abyss, I really try to focus on, you know, maybe I can do some editing on some photos, not Photoshop, but maybe encompassing my logo into the, the before and afters, and maybe taking the before and encompassing it into the after photo, and really try to focus on the administrative stuff. And to answer your question, I really try to focus on the brand when I find myself slipping into that state of mind. And that state of mind always is going to come back to haunt you. And a part of the reason why I felt like things didn't work out with Tanya, the mother of my child, is because of the stress with SMP. I heard a lot of awesome stories at Meeting of the Minds about how they saw rainbows and it was just a calling. And, you know, this wasn't necessarily something that was all peaches and cream for me. It wasn't crimson and clovers. Learning this and knowing that you're not up to par and you're not, you know, really doing the best work that you can, Really weighs heavy on your spirit when you have three of those guys looking down at you the next day for a week straight. And so that constant stress can kind of turn you into not necessarily a nasty person, but you become frustrated and you become easily aggravated. And so I felt like SMP, the stress of learning this and mastering it, really had a took its toll on my relationship with the mother of my child, and to the point where it just made sense to part ways because I didn't want my child to see me angry, frustrated. I didn't want her to see us arguing, having these types of quarrels time and time again. And I wouldn't necessarily say that SMP was the main reason why I had these quarrels, but when you have that tick on the back of your mind and you're dealing with everyday life and you have this tick going on where you just are mad at yourself and frustrated because you just know you're not doing the best work, or maybe I care too much, or maybe I'm more ethical because I talk to some artists, they'd be like, you worry about it, man, they get what you get. I'm like, what do you mean they get what they get? You know what I mean? I'm worried about this. And maybe it's the clientele that I see. I know them on a personal basis. I did a lot of grassroots marketing and developed my own like name in my own community. And so a lot of the people that I did initially were friends of mine. So it's like, why am I going to not give my best to my friends or people that I went to high school with? I felt like I needed to bring my A game. And when you don't have that A game and you're looking on Instagram and this dude's doing way better work and doing 20 times more than you are, and you're over there struggling to make your bills, you're struggling to find somebody that'll do marketing for you, and you're just struggling to make ends meet all together. And then you see your other artist jumping in the Maserati with the Rolex. It's easy to become not sour, but just frustrated and mad because you were sold a dream that you were going to make decent money right out the gate. And like I said, it hasn't been until this last 3 years that I've really seen a return on this investment. And that's why I'm real. I like to talk about these things that nobody, I think, oftentimes likes to shove underneath the rug and shine the good times. Look at all the good things. Look at the awesome award I got. That awesome award means nothing to me when you've cried and given your whole heart and soul to something and just almost given up. It's nice to have. But at the end of the day, does it erase those ugly, hard times that you had? No. But what it does offer, it offers a sense of like knowing that you're going in the right direction, that you're doing the right thing, that your time isn't going wasted. So it makes it better a little bit. But that very next day when you go to the office by yourself, you're back in that hole. But it's nice to see that and say, hey, it's a reminder that I am actually trying and I'm actually doing the best that I can. And people are noticing it.
Yeah, agree. Agreed.
And when it comes to scalp micropigmentation, you need tools you can trust. That's where InQ SMP products come in. Jade needles are designed for precision and durability, giving you consistent, flawless results every time. Pair them with InQ Pigment, a rich, long-lasting formula your clients will love. Keep things smooth with InQ Butter, perfect for soothing and protecting the skin. And finish strong with antimicrobial foam cleanser for a clean, worry-free healing process. Ready to take your SMP game to the next level? Visit InQCare.com today. InQ SMP products are made for artists by artists.
And just so I understand you, I just want to make sure that I understand. You're saying, so in order to deal with, you know, the divorce and all that sort of thing, you basically kept your mind busy so you wouldn't focus on it. So you started getting really in the weeds and the details of all the little administrative things just mm-hmm. to take your mind off of it, right? And focus on the business.
Yeah. And at the time, Good Look Inc. really took me on under their wing. So I initially chained with Bryce Cleveland, and then Leah Match, you know, took me and did a 10-day training with me where I just worked with clients with her over, like she does two or three a day. Her and I just did them all together. And then there was times where she would just be like, hey, these are your three for the day. I'm just going to stand over your shoulder. So, you know, having that support, And having that eager, that wanting, that desire to continue to better yourself, I think is key. But also talking about the trying times, I think is also key too, to let people know that they're not all alone. A lot of these artists are working by themselves. So I really wanted to kind of jump on this podcast to really shed some light on that facet of S&P, because I don't feel like a lot of people do.
Yeah, no, you're right. I remember being alone. Confused, scared, like, oh my God, I'm gonna fuck this dude's head up, you know. And it's very scary. It's very scary when you finally alone, just you by yourself with a person who's paying, not one of your friends or family members that you're doing for cheap or doing for free, but when you're finally with your first paying customer, just you and them, and it's time to start and you're working, it's my hand was like, you know, doing like that. It was shaking. And I was terrified, to be honest. And I felt like I didn't deserve the opportunity almost. But I knew that I was like, I'm going to force myself to get better. I just kept telling myself, I'm just going to force myself to get better. I know that because I wanted to quit so many times. I was like, fuck this. I'm just going to stay at the bank. But I was like, I'm just going to force myself to get better. So I just kept practicing and kept practicing. And, you know, and then I did get better. But I mean, like what you said in the beginning, doing the procedure is one thing. I feel like getting better at the procedure is easy. It's not easy. It's difficult to do, but you know what you need to do to get better. The other area is the business, which is, I would say, more difficult than learning the procedure, by far more difficult.
Oh, absolutely. And the reason why I say that, and I'm so sorry to cut you off, there's a lot of people that, in my opinion, prey on new artists. When they see you coming out as a new artist, especially some of these marketing groups, I feel you're prey. And I've been preyed upon.
I've been taken advantage of as well, buddy. I've been taken advantage of. And a lot of people listening to this have been taken advantage of. All right, so you work at Good Look Inc. You're going back and forth between Houston. What were the other locations you were going to?
So Denver was my where I lived, and then Houston was my territory, but Leah needed help in Nashville at the We Grow Hair Clinic, Payway. So I would help out there. Mike, I forget his last name, is the owner there, but and then their headquarters. So they're located in Bloomington, Minnesota.
That's Good Look Inc.
Yes. So
I honestly see their advertisements all the time. I have no idea who's behind it. I have no idea.
So Leah Match is their lead artist. Megan.
Leah Match?
Yep, Leah Match. She's a pioneer in the industry. She has a lot of respect, a lot of history in the industry. And then Roxanne Chihos is their CEO.
Who's their marketing person?
You know, I believe they outsource that to a third party and as with any organization, I know they're constantly changing and trying new things. As to who they're utilizing now, I'm not too sure.
Whatever they're doing, because this is what I always see. I see Good Look Inc., but I'm like, there's no Good Look Inc. around me. How are they showing up on the top of the Google search wherever I'm at? You know, the top search in Delaware. Right. So I'm going to be top search in Delaware, probably most affiliate in this area. But they're showing up as a top paid search. And so to me, I'm like, why are they doing that? Why are they doing paid searches? To me, it seems like all 50 states because it seems like a waste of money. I don't know. Do they got a lot of money? Like, I don't know what's going on there.
Oh, so yeah, they've been, you know, they're a pioneer in the industry. As to why they have marketing in every state is because they work with different clinics in every state. So, for instance, I own Scalp Pro Denver. Remember, I started that in November of 2020. They link up with different clinics and have those clinics service their clients on their behalf. So it behooves them to put marketing in every state because they'll be like, oh, you're in Colorado? Guess what? We got an artist in Colorado. And now that I'm not working with them, they've already found another artist. It's a local hair transplant clinic out here. So they'll establish relationships and continue to establish relationships with different hair transplant clinics, whether they train somebody in that clinic or that hair transplant place, or whether they have a clinic that's already been around servicing clients, they'll team up with them. But that's why you see marketing in every state for Good Look Inc.
Makes sense. You don't have to share numbers, but if you want to, feel free. But I just want to ask you this. So Good Look Inc., they said, let's say there's somebody listening to this. They're like, all right, I want to link up with Good Look Inc. The proceed will keep a simple number. It's $1,000 SMP, okay? $1,000. Mm-hmm. Are they taking 35% and then you get 65%? They taking 40%? Is it 50-50 or...
Well, it varies. So it varies. That's a great question. So number one, if you're an affiliate, the percentage split is going to be different if you're a traveling artist. So initially, my percentage split was obviously less generous than it was once I became one of the part of their core staff as a traveling artist. So to answer your question, the percentage that you would get as an affiliate would be way different than it would be if you're actually a traveling artist traveling on their behalf. Keep in mind, they would also pay for your room and board and food and things of that nature. So I think that would ideally like to be taken into account in that percentage split as well.
Okay. Thank you for sharing that. Now, when you finally say, hey, you know what? It's been good Link Inc. We've had fun, done a lot of stuff, learned a lot, made some friends, yada, yada, yada. Time for me to start my own thing. How did you end it? What did you do?
It just didn't make sense. When I let them go, it all kind of made sense to everybody. It was like, oh, we understand why. And we're not mad at you. If you ever want to come back, we have our door open to you. And we would love to have you back if things don't work out on your own, as we know they probably won't, as we've seen with a lot of artists that go on their own accord. That's what they told me.
So they're basically saying, we don't think you're going to figure this shit out. The business. Yeah. You're just an artist.
Mm-hmm.
And how long ago was that?
That was in February of this year. Since then, I won gold at Meeting of the Minds for best hard lineup, as you know. And they reached out to me and congratulated me. And, you know, I think we're surprised that I was still alive and kicking.
Good. Do you regret your decision?
No, not at all. I feel that it was a stepping stone, just like Conifer Medical Center was. You know, it was not time wasted. Was it something I was supposed to do the rest of my life? No. But was it something that I needed to do at that point in my life? Yes. Why? Because it helped me. Like with Good Look Inc. or with Conifer Medical Center, I feel like the communication and patient contact skills is where I learned that. And then with Good Look Inc., the technical skills is where I really developed that and some of the business aspect, because that's when I really started to watch their approach and client acquisition.
I love that. So you took pieces from each area you were in, you took pieces with you to start your, you know, Scout Pro. But the hard part is you're an established artist. You have years of experience, but it looks like Scout Pro, you know, is only what, a year old, which is
since 2020 is when we opened.
Oh, okay. So that's when it was open. But were you repping Scout Pro when you were able to go to these different locations? Could you put it under the Scout Pro look, you know, brand?
Yeah, absolutely. What was cool is that I was a 1099 with Good Look Inc. So there was no like compete closure or no contest closure or whatever they call those. If I wanted to service clients and get clients on my own accord, they didn't have any issues with it. But I didn't necessarily put too much energy towards my own client acquisition. Why? Because they bared the responsibility if things didn't go well with the procedure. So I wanted to wait till I felt 1,010% comfortable that I can handle the responsibility of any adverse or anything going wrong with the procedure. And once I felt like I could handle that, that's when I really started to focus on my own accord in terms of client acquisition. But we have been standing strong since 2020, establishing ourselves during a pandemic, and still being here on one of the hottest streets in Denver, I feel like is a feat in itself.
Are you still at the Tennyson location? And absolutely. I looked you up before we got on, and you're in a huge building. You're like on the biggest building in, look like on the street, at least to me.
Yeah. So Tennyson is located in the Highlands. Highland is one of the most up and coming neighborhoods in the state of Colorado. Remember, I grew up in this neighborhood, but once upon a time, Joey, this neighborhood was really rough. This was a rough end of town, so to speak.
Okay.
But since then, it's gentrified tremendously to the point where if I walk down the street, they're kind of wondering where I'm coming from with all these tattoos, so to speak.
That's good. I mean, I guess that's good for business, right? That's good for business. And I've been to Denver Airport, and then I went to Boulder City, Colorado. I don't know how far that is from you.
It's a good time.
Yeah, yeah. It was for my
college up there.
Bachelor party. It was for my bachelor party. We went whitewater rafting and zip lining and stuff. It was fun. I had a lot of fun.
It was a good time.
Yeah. How far are you from Boulder City?
So that's about an hour away. That's US 36, about 50 minutes away from me.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, we had a lot of fun. We did.
You know, it's ironic because after my when I split with Tanya, the mother of my child, I ended up getting an apartment right above my location. So my location is on the street, commercial, and then I take an elevator up to the top floor to my apartment.
That's cool. That's cool. So easy commute.
Yeah, it's a curse. You're always available. It's a bit of a curse.
Now, because you have hair, look, you have like a full head of hair. You don't have any SMP, do you?
Personally? No, actually, I had Alex Corona perform my first session.
Oh shit, that's what it was. I saw that. He did it in New York, right?
Yes.
I was gonna shout to Alex. I love Alex.
Good people.
So do you think before that, did it help you? Or did you have, was it a hard time for you to get bald guys to come to you because you already had hair?
No, I like to utilize my hair as an example of approach. And when I say that is because when somebody comes in for a procedure or wanting a procedure, I like to really say, hey, let's pause. What other solutions have you explored before we start to tattoo your head? And you'll be surprised how many people haven't explored other alternatives to hair loss. And so I like to utilize this, and I felt like helped me a lot close deals, because if I say, hey, we're not going to just jump in and tattoo your head right away. Let's talk about some of these solutions. Well, what are some of these solutions? Okay, well, when the last time you seen a versed barber, like a good barber? You know, you're kind of letting your hair grow out all crazy. There's some things like hair fibers, enhancements, Beijing, which I use, that maybe can offer you some sort of relief before we jump into S&P. And there's been some times where clients are like, oh, Tobias, I ain't doing that fiber shit. I'm not doing the hairspray, spray paint thing. I'm not doing that. But I go, well, that's what I'm doing. You know, I'm actually suffering from hair loss in the corners here. But what I'm doing to remedy it before we jump into S&P are these other alternatives. Are you versed in these other alternatives? And you'll be surprised how much the client appreciates me going over these alternatives, such as Beijing, which over fibers, hair systems, traditional barbers, PRP therapy, red light therapy. You'll be surprised how appreciative that I go over these options and how much I think helps me close the deal, because they're like, Tobias, I already tried all that. And it makes me seem like I'm not trying to dig in your pocket right away. I'm like, first off, let's slow it down. Have we tried the barber? Oh, we haven't. Well, you know what? I'm a licensed barber. I've been doing it for 13 years. Let me have a whack at it. Maybe we can, address your concerns with just that. You know, here's my fee for a haircut. And they'll be like, wow, you know what? I never really had the Beijing. I like it because it's not like the fibers where it falls out. It's a hair and skin dye. I think I'm going to use the Beijing until I'm ready to pull the hair on, pull the trigger on the scalp micro in a year or so. And that'll give me some time to save. Thank you so much, Tobias. And then right away, they want to go ahead and go through with the sale because I gave an opportunity to save and I wasn't quick to reach in their pocketbook. Or I'll be like, hey, have you tried a hair system? Oh, my good friends over at, forget the name of the company, but they do awesome hair systems there. I would love to potentially link you up with them. Or have you tried any finasteride or any topicals or any oral medications? Oh, I didn't even know they made an oral medication. Yeah, maybe we could try this oral medication and, critique or, do the haircut unique to your hair loss. And maybe we could remedy that. So it's kind of cool to ease people into S&P. And it, in my opinion, helps solidify the sale when you go over these alternatives to truly make sure, like, you know what, we've explored all these alternatives, man. I think S&P is actually going to be the best bet. Let's do it. You know?
Nice. Yeah. No, I agree. You don't want to act like a used car salesman either, right? That doesn't seem to work. People can feel that. I do very similar. I mean, I was doing a consultation this morning and we're talking about PRP, all those different things, the fibers. A lot of people will use the fibers and they're tired of using the fibers. I feel like people who come in and use the fibers, they're so happy to to see me, you know, because they're so tired of wearing the fibers.
Absolutely. But I like to utilize my hair as an example, like, hey, this is currently what I'm doing. I actually got some S&P under there, and I'm also utilizing an enhancement after I see a traditional versed barber. And they'll be like, oh, I feel like I can oftentimes offer a little bit more sense of direction. This is just S&P. You get what you get, and you can kind of figure out what looks best for you once you're done. I like to, you know, and it gives me an opportunity to continue that relationship with the client. Like I oftentimes say, hey, you know, I know you see me for S&P, but know that you have three free haircuts for traditional barbering. Why? Because we could critique the haircut to your density. Say you have density and you're trying to hold on to it. Maybe we could do a nice taper, you know, and maybe do a dash of fibers after we've done it just to make it look perfect. Or, you know, I understand that you don't even want to leave your hair long. You're just going to trim it, but you have an awesome beard. Give me an opportunity to lay you on back and, you know, do a traditional or a nice beard trim. And what I like about that, it gives me an opportunity to maintain the relationship that I've established with these clients. So it's not like you've seen me three times, you paid me, see you later. I'm never going to see you again. Catch me on Facebook. No, actually, and that's what I tell clients. Once you've seen me for S&P, you've unlocked me as a traditional barber. You don't see any barber pulls. You're not going to see me, you know, servicing anybody off the street. If somebody comes in asking for a haircut, I say, well, unfortunately, we're closed to the public. We're a private studio. And so I offer that service just to the clients, and it gives me an opportunity to maintain that relationship with them. And you'll be surprised how many people take me up on that offer. And now they've become my family. Look at Charlie Slaughter. His kids coming in to see me. I'm like, hey, I expanded the services to you, not your kids. But him and I hit it off so well, I cut his kids' hair. So now I have days where I do traditional barbering in the clinic and days that I just 2 days a week. And then the rest is going to be S&P.
Nice. Occasionally, I'll just give person a haircut during the consultation, mm-hmm. and I won't even charge them. You know, I'll just mm-hmm. say, I'm just going to give you a haircut, and I'll explain to them what I can do and how this will look better if you do it this way. You know, keep it shorter on the sides. It could look thicker and fuller on top. Why do you have it all the same length? You're going to look more bald. You know, it just, some things you would think are common sense, but not so much.
Not all sense is common, as my mom would say.
Right. I mean, it's true. So what are some of your favorite products for S&P?
I've been really liking Steven Gretzker's new pigment line Reclaim. I've had an opportunity to play with
Stevie G?
Yes, CBGs, the Inku needles too. I had an opportunity to play with those in Meeting of the Minds. Shout to Jade. And then Anthony Arguello, I believe is his last name, with his new 2RLs. Those have been a go-to lately. I'm currently working on a gentleman that was seen by another practitioner. I had 5 sessions done with him. The look isn't complete, nor is the hairline symmetrical. So some of the impressions are a little bit big. So I'm really, really excited to use that 2RL in between and maybe soften some of these
heavier. So the person went to somebody else and you're fixing it?
Yeah. They seen a local practitioner here and the hairline is just a bit crooked. So we're going to go ahead and perform hairline simulation. I talked to you a little bit about that process so we can correct it and kind of get them looking a little bit more symmetrical, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah. We talked about that in person, right? Mm-hmm. At the Meeting of the Minds. Do you think that is the best way to do it?
No, I feel like that approach is good for me because of my background with traditional barbering. If you have that background in traditional barbering, maybe that'll help you out a lot more in terms of the symmetry of the lineup. But if that's something that you don't really have a history with or a background with, I don't know if trying to learn that would be ideal in terms of making it symmetrical, because lining up people or creating this hairline in traditional barbering like that is a bit of an art in itself. Keep in mind, they're looking at you in the eyes or it's an awkward experience. So it's a bit difficult to make that symmetry. And once you get it with a hairline, then it's easy to kind of bring that on over with the hair fibers and S&P. But for somebody that I'm training, I may show them it. I'll show them that approach and say, hey, this is a way that I do it. But if you don't have that barbering background, it's going to be hard to learn it. But it could be an awesome opportunity for you to practice. Like, spray the fibers and then get your trimmer out and then, you know, line it up and then look in the mirror and say, is that symmetrical? And just do that over and over again, erase it, spray the fibers on there, line it up, look in the mirror, is that symmetrical? Maybe that would help you.
And when you do that, once you get it symmetrical, what pencil or pen do you use to trace it out?
I use your traditional white, you're right, the white, you know, the ones that everybody seems to use, the kind of Crayola type. Okay. And so what I'll do is I'll lathe. So when I spray the fibers, I line it up and once me and the client agree on the symmetry, I'll pull out the phone. Because after you looked at it, or if you've done the lineup a million times and then you ask the client, does that look good? They're oftentimes like, yeah, it looks good, because your eyes kind of got used to just looking at it. But once you pull out the camera and then kind of take a video, the camera never lies. You'll be like, oh, that shit's all crooked. Let's do that again. Check it. Look how crooked this is.
You hear that, people? This is a great tip. I do it too. Always take a picture. If you're going to do a perfect shape up, take a picture, because your eyes play tricks on you. Take the picture, because then you'll see, oh, it's a little bit high on the right. You know, it's a little bit low on the left. You know, just do it. Doesn't take long. It'll save you. It'll save you a lot of work in the future. Mm-hmm. Now, do you have any specific ink that you go to?
You know, lately the Reclaim is what I've been going to. Before that, I was utilizing the Illusion pigment line. That's specific to Good Look ink. I may be a bit biased in the sense that that was what I was trained with and what I was instructed to utilize on all.
What's different
clients.
With the Illusion? I don't even know about it.
So with the Illusion, with Reclaim, I feel like you're really identifying undertones, and then based on those undertones, developing a mix that is most ideal for their Fitzpatrick or their classification of skin. But with the Illusion pigment line, what they utilize is strictly the Fitzpatrick scale. So they'll say, hey, Fitzpatrick 2, if the client has a Fitzpatrick 2, then you'll go ahead and utilize this particular ink set. Or if they're at a Fitzpatrick 5, then you'll utilize this particular ink set. So it's pre-mixed, and it doesn't necessarily, it takes a lot of the headache out, because I felt like that was some of the things that I was not discouraged on, but a little bit gun shy is, you know, identifying undertones, or what if I identify the wrong undertone, and then what if I put too many drops in there and it just comes out too dark? For the longest time, I felt like the Illusion pigment line was just safe and consistent.
Okay. Okay. And for the, it's called Illusion. That's the brand.
Mm-hmm. Illusion.
And what are the pre-mixes? Is it like light, medium, dark, super dark, or what is it?
No, there's six levels. So it is carbon based. That's how they kind of go about it. They do add a little bit of color to it on that charcoal based.
Okay. Okay. Nice. How can people find you, Tobias?
You know, I oftentimes tell people that Facebook is going to be the best point of contact to just find me, or if you want to see my everyday kind of interactions. I'm not too active on Instagram. That's something that I am going to change, but I felt like, now this was a bit biased of an opinion, that, you know, the industry is really found on Facebook, in particular with some of these groups. Unfortunately, Instagram doesn't offer any of these groups where we could collaboratively maybe, you know, post some pictures and throw ideas off of each other. So I oftentimes find myself on Facebook, Tobias Romero, R-O-M-E-R-O. You can also find me on Instagram, ScalPro_. I'm always active. Any questions, any qualms, I'm always willing to answer anything. So anything at all, I'm here.
Thank you for coming on. Thank you for sharing your story. One of the best I've heard. Great. Thank you for being so honest and transparent. Stay on. Daddy.